This is Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the artists and music behind the 2015 season of the Aspen Music Festival and School and previews upcoming performances. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival, and can also be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. Today we'll talk with Aspen Music Festival and School leaders Alan Fletcher and Asadora Centurion about some of the highlights of their 66th season. Then we'll talk with pianist Wuhan and cellist David Finkel, who opened up the season 2 days ago and will be showcasing top Aspen Music School students in a free studio recital of piano trios and quartets. That's Sunday at 7:30. But first, let's hear what Alan Fletcher and Asadora Centurion have to say about the Aspen Music Festival season. I'd like to ask both of you a little bit about the theme, I guess you might say, of the Aspen Music Festival concerts this year, which is Dreams of Travel. And there's certainly a lot of music to choose from, as I've discovered right here on Aspen Public Radio. I've been playing one travel-related piece after another in the classical repertoire. Who came up with the idea, and how does it kind of fold into the season?
Typically, the season theme is proposed by Asador, and that was true in this case. Mm-hmm. I think I actually created the phrase Dreams of Travel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With the choice of Dreams of Travel, it got me realizing that every piece of music is a journey. We start in some place, and then there's a deepening of understanding or something that is given to you as an audience member. I'm interested in how Dreams of Travel kind of fits into the whole concept of music as a whole and the arc of music, but did you have that in mind as well, or was it mostly just about the travel aspect?
An essay in our program book proposes actually that the theme extends through time and space, that our double bill of operas in the middle of the summer, Cows of Apollo and the Classical Style. Classical Style has Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven traveling from heaven back to Earth in search of Charles Rosen and support for their music. And in Cows of Apollo, we travel back in time to the very invention of music in ancient Greece.
That's much more traveling than, say, France to Spain or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I think the theme is one that opens up a lot of possibility rather than the kind of theme that more limits programming. Mm-hmm. And so, as you say, there's a whole lot of ideas about travel in music, which can be literal or conceptual. Or in the case of Debussy hearing the gamelan in the great Paris World Exposition. So the gamelan traveled from Indonesia, but Debussy encountered this wonderful and to him strange music there right in Paris.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So can you give us a few examples of how that theme is woven into the first couple of weeks of the concerts?
Well, first of all, we bookend the season with two versions of Scheherazade, and that is certainly represents pretty much all the ideas of travel, both in using exotic elements of music, portraying stories of other cultures, a sort of longing for the other. So Rimsky's great orchestral version is on our opening Sunday concert, and then Ravel's very beautiful song for orchestra is on our last Sunday concert.
I notice also that the Middle East, we're involved in, obviously, my entire lifetime I've seen conflicts in the Middle East between America and various Middle Eastern countries. And yet, oftentimes, when you go back to, say, Mozart and what he did with his Turkish-style music and many other composers, it seems as though it makes it a much more accessible world, in a sense. It's almost like an invitation to see these people, like in Abduction from the Seraglio or something, as being exotic and interesting and not nearly as scary as they might have been on the battlefield.
Well, yes, exoticism, of course, is at the center of this theme. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. composers like Rimsky-Korsakov or Debussy, who dreamed in Rimsky's case, there are several works about Arab world, and Scheherazade, Anatar. Anatar is not on the season, but a colleague of his, Balakirev, wrote Islami. Mm-hmm. And Debussy's fascination with Iberian Peninsula. And much of that is imagined in his music, whether it's Etampes or Iberia or some other works, as well as the theme deals with an entire program being a journey in one evening or a cultural exchange. In some instances, some composers have actually written sounds of their homeland. in their music. We have a little snippet with our guest harp faculty member this year, Annalene Lennertz from Vienna, who plays a transcription of the Moldau on the harp, which is, of course, a trip down the Moldau. So there, as Alan described and as you described, the idea takes many shapes and forms, literal and otherwise.
In the journey through time, obviously, there are so many composers who go back and honor the Middle Ages or the Baroque or the Classical era or whatever.
Absolutely, and we have those with Stravinsky's Pulcinella and similar works throughout the summer. So time travel is as well imagined by these composers, and we represent them on the season. But in general, the theme is just to be the red line through the summer. It just draws us all together, and it's something we follow. But there's plenty of repertoire for everyone to enjoy without having to pay attention to the theme as well.
Well, going a little bit away from the theme, I would like to ask a little bit about some of the other programs, some of the other things that are on the program. You always have Ed Berkeley directing the opera, and this year you have some very interesting ones. Maybe we can just touch on that for just a few moments. What are the operas that are being performed on the stage at the Wheeler and also, of course, at the Tent?
Sure, although I think the operas fit into the theme. Romeo and Juliet is a French opera on an English play about an Italian people. And then we've talked about Cows of Apollo, the Bing travel to ancient Greece, and the classical style being Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven through time and space. Così fan tutte, our final opera, is also about the other and the idea that the two men pretend to be traveling and instead come back dressed as Albanians, which was also a nod to the Middle East in a way. We don't think of Albania as the Middle East, but Albania was essentially Turkish at the time. And then Aida, an Italian opera, but set in Egypt because it was commissioned by the Egyptian government for the opening of the Suez Canal. So we have a lot of travel.
And tell us also about, I believe there's a big surprise coming. If you're just looking at the calendar, it's not on there yet. Tell us about this fantastic tenor who's making his appearance, I think, for the first time in Aspen.
It is a debut in Aspen for Vittorio Grigolo. He has been a major star in Europe at Salzburg, at La Scala, made a sensational Met debut. But he's still in his 30s, so this is someone who will be with us for a long time. We hope a figure of the kind of importance of Pavarotti or Domingo as his voice and his artistry mature.
Well, he's got a fabulous ping in his voice, and a lot of us may have seen him, and I forgot which one it was, but one of the Met HDs, I think, made him famous in the United States.
Right. This season he was Hoffman in Tales of Hoffman, and he was a Degrier in Menon Lescaut.
Right, that's right. Okay. Yep.
Thursday, July 23rd, 6 p.m.
Yes. And a unique opportunity to have dinner with the artist following the concert. We are having a dinner at the Little Mel, to which the public is invited for a fee.
Let me ask you about the contemporary music, which is always a very strong aspect of the programming here. You get to hear music here that you've never heard anywhere else. Last year you had Unabashedly Atonal. What do you have for people who love 20th and 21st century music?
We have tremendous offerings, and the visits from about 11 or 12 of the world's greatest composers coming this summer. First that comes to mind for me is the classical style, which we co-commissioned from our own faculty composer, Stephen Stuckey. But also a beautiful piano concerto with Orly Shaham. The concerto is by Steve Mackey, who's a very good friend. It is a very current work. It is also a work in very grand style. It would have fit our neo-romantic theme last summer, I think. I think the audience is in for a real treat with that.
We also have the music of Shulamit Ron.
Is she coming also?
She is also wonderful. In attendance, as is Steve Mackey, the composer of the Stumble to Grace concerto. Christopher Rouse, our former composer in residence, is returning this summer. We're presenting his third symphony, which is commissioned by St. Louis Symphony, and here is being led by their music director, David Robertson.
New string quartet by Sid Hodkinson, who's been on our faculty for many years.
He's written many. Is this like his ninth or something?
Seventh.
Seventh.
It's his seventh. George Tsontakis is represented with Portraits of El Greco, which is a chamber work for a larger ensemble populated by members of our artist faculty. A lot of the works are very colorful. They take us on journeys themselves. The composers will be here themselves. Oftentimes, they will be either interviewed by Alan on High Notes, so folks should follow the High Notes schedule, and or I may have them attend the Sunday Prelude if they coincide a Sunday program, so they can talk about their music there. This year, the population of contemporary music is very much throughout the entire season in mm-hmm. context with the programming around, mm-hmm. surrounding.
Jennifer Higdon will be with us, and also a wonderful composer who's been a friend of mine since my freshman year in college, which is some years ago, Judith Shaton.
Is Christopher Theophanidis coming?
He is.
He is. Wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful. I'd like to ask also about the orchestras. You have more orchestras up here than just about any place in the world. You have your Tuesday Aspen Conducting Orchestra, of course, on Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. And that's just an average week, I guess.
Right. So we have those and also an orchestra in the Opera Pit.
So I guess you could say you have five regular orchestras here.
We do. And it's also a variety of programming. If you went to some other festivals, which I don't name, which have wonderful orchestral presence, but that orchestra will produce a single program in a week, mm-hmm. Which is normal. Yes. But we have four completely different orchestra programs in a week.
I'd like to ask specifically about Mahler. You have the first, the fifth, and the sixth symphonies being performed this season. For many performing arts groups, if you can pull one Mahler symphony off, you've really accomplished something. But you have so many musicians here. In fact, I would think that Mahler would be desirable just to give your winds and brass a chance to really show off their stuff.
Well, that's exactly right. It's extremely important programming for our educational aspect, and it gives so many opportunities to both students and faculty. So mm-hmm. to have two or three Mahlers on a season is about normal for us.
Asador, you're a tremendously busy man. I see you everywhere in the festival, and yet I also see you at all kinds of concerts, I would almost say most of the concerts. I wonder if this is the time when you get to recharge your batteries, when you're actually hearing what all your work is about.
Well, there is an element of that, and since you see me at those places, I see you at those places, so you must have your own reasons as well. Music, for me, actually, is a winter-long cerebral exercise. Mm-hmm. But the payoff, the real payoff, is when the artists arrive, and I include our students, our faculty, and the guest artists in the word artist. When they arrive and they turn the calendar into live performances, for me, that's when I come to life. And music represents many things to people, of course: transformation, solace, meditation, inward looking moment. So whatever it is for people, to me, it enlivens me, it regenerates me. And the chemical reaction of the pieces and the performers and the sequence of the days and the weeks is really, for me, a great gift, a great momentous opportunity to really live the words life in music.
Asador, a lot of people come to the Aspen Music Festival for either the whole season or most of the season, for 6 to 8 weeks. We talk about this sometimes, me and other audience members, about how the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Could you speak to that just a little bit, about what happens to somebody, including yourself perhaps, that is involved in this total immersion in music of all different kinds, and somehow something emerges of that that is not just this particular Beethoven trio or this particular Mahler symphony?
I think, and it's only a guess on my part, I imagine that the folks who come for the entire summer are really looking for some opportunity to leave their daily world behind. Mm-hmm. There are projects in the summer that are sequential. The Mahler symphonies, for example, are also sequential. One happens before 5 and happens before 6. There's a Mozart violin sonata cycle that is practically sequential. There are other projects that whether knowingly or unknowingly, if you're attending these concerts over a number of weeks, they reveal some information, some, whether it's physical, metaphysical, existentialist, expressionist, whatever way you are imagining your own experience, they reveal some message, some transformation to the patron, I believe, because I do hear these comments at the end of the summer. And people are exhilarated, although they might be exhausted from attending so many events, but they are exhilarated, and that is carrying them.
One of the great success stories is your conducting program. It seems that many of the conductors who go through that program end up with jobs, conducting posts, more than perhaps any other place in the United States.
Well, thank you very much. The American Academy of Conducting at Aspen, the brainchild of David Zinman, who got the idea from his own mentor, Pierre Monteux. David Zinman brought that idea to Aspen, modified it. Here it is an orchestra of some conductors and mostly fellowship players. And we do get a chance to audition worldwide. The applicants are very much representative of North America, most of Europe and the Far East, students who are working at a high level with very well-known teachers. The program offers the conductors an opportunity to work with an orchestra on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. There is no other such opportunity where for 2 months a conductor can have access to an orchestra dedicated to work with them on the repertoire with teachers as varied and significant as Robert Spano, this year Larry Ratcliff, Hugh Wolfe, Patrick Summers from Houston Grand Opera, Nicholas McGeegan, and Federico Cortese. It is absolutely a stellar program, but I have to say that we have to share the light with our composition program, which has been mm-hmm. recently reconstituted with Steve Stuckey leading it, and Sid Hodkinson and George Tsontakis partnership with the Sid Hodkinson and George Tsontakis, Alan Fletcher and Robert Spano. And the composition program has already yielded so many award-winning composers.
Well, I see that I think Belly Up is back on as a venue for the Aspen Music Festival, some of its programs, and now the Aspen Art Museum. Tell us about some of the newer venues that you have that are where you would not necessarily expect to hear these concerts.
Well, historically, Chris, we have had a great presence in town during the festival season. And with the development of the new beautiful Shigeru Ban architect building of the Aspen Art Museum, the director of the museum and Alan in conversation have evolved this collaboration where we will have 6 different ensembles performing on their rooftop venue throughout the summer. These are free to the public. They'll represent a real range of activity from the festival, from our fellowship harpists to ensemble of contemporary music, which the museum really wants, pianists or string quartets playing varied programs. And those are on, people should look for them, they're on Tuesdays at the Aspen Art Museum rooftop. Mm-hmm. And the Belly Up is wonderful in that Mike Goldberg, who's a big supporter of the festival and school, approached us to present a project on Zappa last year, which mm-hmm. absolutely fits very nicely with our percussion ensemble and Jonathan Haas leading that ensemble. This year, we're working with him and the artist known as Kishibashi, who is a string player, singer himself, and very much trained in classical music, but has developed his own style. And so he will be working with some of our students from our Center for Advanced Quartet Studies in a program of his own work. So he'll be performing himself alone as well as with the string quartet. And that is on July 25th at the Belly Up. And we are also present in Basalt at the Basalt Regional Library. It's a Thursday evening series, 6 p.m., as well as the Carbondale has a new library. Also, they have a music room and we have a presence there as well. We do have a standing set of concerts in town at the community church as well as Aspen Chapel. So our presence in town is growing and the profile of that presence is different from venue to venue. It's not, don't expect the same thing in all venues, as I described earlier.
If you've just joined us, this is Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Chris Moore, interviewing pianist Wu Han, cellist David Finkel, and four of their students who will be appearing on Sunday evening at 7:30 at Harris Hall in a free studio recital of piano trios and quartets.
You have the honor of opening up with the first official concert, I guess you might say, of the Aspen Music Festival this season. And so we're going to have a cello and piano music, but we're going to have some solo piano music as well, the Scriabin Preludes, which is preludes, right, which I just love. Yes. Now Scriabin, a Russian composer, loved Chopin so much that he stuck Chopin's music under his pillow, hoping that the inspiration would waft through the pillow at night and help him as a composer. Do you think that worked?
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying for years, but actually didn't work on me at all. Scriabin's preludes are very rarely heard on the concert stage. Actually, lots of his stuff these days are not as popular as it should be, in my opinion. It's just such a gorgeous piece. The second half of our recital will be all Russian music, and we originally just want to anchor with the Rachmaninoff Sonata. But I often feel that after the intermission, everybody had a chance to greet and meet and talk, and I always want to find a spot to calm people down. And the Rachmaninoff Sonata started with about 20-some bars of soft music, but immediately going to this really intense emotional turmoil of Rachmaninoff's life. So it was at one point, David and I thought, well, we should really put something in front of that to sort of quiet down the hall. The Opus 16 preludes, there's five little things, and it's one of the most beautiful things. It sort of transports you to a completely different place. Really, every time we tried this program with the Scriabin before the Rachmaninoff, there's always a sense of like, we're in another place and how beautiful this is. So I love this kind of combination of the programming.
I also found it interesting because Scriabin and Rachmaninoff used to have big arguments about things like whether different key signatures had colors, which Rachmaninoff thought was ridiculous, and Scriabin saw them all the time. Do you know anything about the relationship between these two very, very different composers, either one of you?
No.
Great question.
But I can't fill it in any more than you just did. We do start with an all-German first half and then move to Russia. And that's exactly what happened with Russian music, is that Western European music, first Italian opera actually came into St. Petersburg through Catherine the Great. And then thereafter, German composers influenced the Russians, French composers, and gradually they absorbed these traditions and made them their own. So I think what's most interesting about our program is to hear the kind of evolution of the Russian sound through the music of the very fantastical music of Scriabin, and then into the more actually traditional melding of classical traditions with romantic sensibility that you hear in the Rachmaninoff.
It seems like almost every composer who bothers to write for the cello puts some of their best music, they don't write schlock when they're writing something as intimate as a sonata for cello and piano. Do either of you have a feel for what that genre, in a very broad sense perhaps, inspires in composers that might be a little different from what's inspired by a violin sonata or a string quartet or something like that?
Well, I totally agree with you. The cello-piano duo repertoire is the most spectacular. I think, for me personally, I contributed to a few factors. First of all, cellists are usually, in general, they are very, very nice people. Something about their register, something about that you have to carry your cello around all over the world. It's a lot of hard work. And something about just this incredible register is in the most human voice, the baritone's voice. They're just nice people. So if you look into history, Beethoven has a good friends that are cellists, Mendelssohn also, Brahms has a good friends that are cellists, and cellists, they're so much fun and they like to hang out with them. And so it's very natural you write cello sonatas for your friends.
All I have to say is, as cellists, I think we're very, very lucky. Aside from the fact that we have to buy seats on the airplanes for the instruments, everything else is a plus. You know, the instrument is beautiful sounding. It's a very natural instrument to hold and draw the bow on, as opposed to the violin. I think violinists would be the first to admit that as well. I mean, my great mentor, Rostropovich, was the epitome of the catalyst performer who inspired composers, who forced composers to compose for the instrument. As a result of his efforts, our literature, our solo literature, and is now more than twice the size it was before his time.
And I guess you could say that there are no cello jokes out there either.
I have never heard a joke about a cellist.
Well, I remember one time walking out of a recital that you were performing, and somebody who was walking out just before us was saying, "She's a real firecracker." And and I just love that. It's a great description, I think, because you do play with a lot of fire. Do you find it sometimes almost exhausting to raise the level of energy of the performers that you're working with?
Yes, sometimes it is. And, you know, when I teach, I do put in a lot of energy. And when I do music, I'm quite intense about it. And but I think as a musician, you need to have that kind of commitment and you need to have that kind of intensity. Otherwise, life will be just really boring and your concert might be very boring. I always think people reflect to their true personality when they make music. I'm a pretty intense person, and David can tell you that. When you make music, you know, your personality, your decision, how you want the music to sound will come through. David's analogy of the chamber music education is totally true. When you play chamber music, you don't really usually have a teacher right next to you to help you to make decisions. So you eventually have to become your own teacher and your own owner of your own musical language. So I often find when people come in to play chamber music, I immediately know if they are kind of person that are sort of getting by with things or if they're really detail oriented. And it's not as simple as just a teacher to teach you the tradition of how to play this concerto and that concerto. So in that way, you really develop your own personality on your own style and your own voice when you play chamber music. I'm just so happy, feeling so lucky I'm a musician that I can bring this great music in front of the audience, and you know, nobody really ever died from my wrong notes.
You're not a brain surgeon like some of your audience members.
Exactly. But I love walking on stage and really provide that 2 hours or whatever, you know, really take a chance. And that's what we live for as a musician, to be able to develop together and evolve as musician together is a joy. And we both are very intense. So it's really, we're blessed to marry to another musician.
Thank you very much for your time, both of you.
Thank you, Chris.
Don't miss the free studio recital of piano trios and quartets. David Finkel and Wu Han have been shepherding all of these students through these performances that will be coming up. Again, that's Sunday at 7:30 at Harris Hall. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the artists and the music behind the 2015 season of the Aspen Music Festival and previews upcoming performances. Please join me Tuesdays at 3:30 for more interviews. My name is Chris Moore.